best then. That snake of a Dornishman was to blame. That Oberyn Martell, and his maester as well. Welcome to the White Book Podcast, your source for Game of Thrones, the living card game content, formerly known as Two Champs and a Chump. We rebranded for the second edition. I want to give a huge thank you to George R. R. Martin, FFG, and to you, our fans, especially those of you that support us on Patreon. I don't do that enough. We've got big news. I want to make sure it's always in front of people this whole summer. We're hosting nationals in Springfield, Missouri again. This year, they're known as the Grand Championships. We've rented a castle. There's Lord of the Rings. There's board games. There's going to be so much more. Head on over to www.conflictatthecastle.com to find out more.
Had a maester?
I guess. I don't know who it is.
Maester of Sunspear.
Missed that part. Could be.
Is it Maester Kellia?
Maybe. I don't remember who that maester is otherwise. Unless, is he, whatchamacallit, Doran's maester, maybe?
Isn't it pronounced Kaleoti? I feel like it is.
I don't know.
I mean... George says, as Roy would yell at us loudly if you were here, you can pronounce it however you want.
He's Doran's. He's Sunspear. Although, weird note here from Wiki of Ice and Fire, Maester Kaleot is only 5 feet tall. It's very, very short for Westeros. But
that's why he could take your icons and sneak.
Yeah, there you go. You just look right over his head.
Almost.
Though, speaking of weird things here, when I searched this up, I was searching for snake quotes on A Search of Ice and Fire. And the passage I just read you, because Search of Ice and Fire normally gives you like the whole paragraph, basically, where a line is from when it searches stuff up. And then you can see, you know, like the last line of the paragraph above it and the paragraph below it, generally. But this one really boggles my mind, because this line was a paragraph unto itself. And so I can see, and the paragraph before it and the paragraph after it are entire, like, single lines. So I can see this whole thing, and it's so bizarre, because I don't really remember this exchange. And these three sentences seem, like, wildly disconnected from each other. So the first is, "He was hurt as a squire riding in his first tourney," Margaery confided. "His horse fell and crushed his leg." Oh. Then the one I read, "That snake of a Dornishman was to blame, that Oberyn Martell, and his maester as well." And then, in all capitals for the entire sentence, "I called for a knight, but you're a bear, a bear, a bear, all black and brown and covered with hair."
Okay. The first two made sense. The third one definitely does not.
Yeah, I don't know if something is screwed up in the search algorithm or if George's writing is really as awkward as Luke says it is, but that seems a little off either way.
Bear, bear.
Well, you know what else is a little off? Me. Gregory Sean.
This chapter pack?
And I'll be reviewing this chapter pack.
Oh man, are you still going by that name?
No, everyone got really annoyed, and like every time my name popped up, one person like went on a rant and everyone got really confused. We changed Schoenthal to Shoes for like a week. We have Shoemaker in there, and that got wildly confusing, and it became a disaster.
Everyone, I was actually about to say, I don't even want to know who that is. Western, I want to just imagine it about everyone,
which is Roy.
Isn't Sandy community builder?
Oh yeah, Sandy's the community builder, because we all got mad at the community organizer that day. And Chris Schoenthal has been mid-range Chris for like 3 years now. Like, that's just, like, that's all he plays. He's mid-range Chris. Does anyone else have a name? That's it, right? Oh, wait. Scott is sure. Scout. Because Dark Mage.
Oh, okay. That's close, at least.
Oh, wait. No, there's definitely other names. Because Lobster is Lobster, right? Like, because what else would he be? Yeah, if we have nicknames. I forgot. The old ones weren't really counting in my head.
Man. I just learned way more about the inner workings of the Lances than I ever expected. This hard-hitting community reporting, this info community is dying to know.
I mean, we alternate between all being mean to each other and yelling about decks and no one paying quite enough attention to anyone's favorite pet deck.
I don't really chat that much, to be honest. I just listen to everyone else chat when I am on.
Well, I mean, everyone has their rules, Scout. I mean, Scout.
All right. Let's. Can the rest of you schmucks introduce yourselves?
I'm still Will. Sometimes
Scout. Zach.
Zach, okay, you sorry. Have to do better.
Zach.
Fuck it. Good enough. Let's review some cards.
Ooh, spicy. Before we review cards, I'm just going to throw out there our graphic designer just responded in the swag organizers chat for Grand Championships, and I am really digging these house card designs he just dropped on me. Yeah. It is not. It is not actually.
Is it just Lemzik? What?
I asked.
You should just
asked, yeah, really.
But he said he's awfully busy with all the other stuff he's doing, and I do not want to totally overwhelm him. But
he is. So he's actually out of. Yeah, he's actually out of town for like a month. I forgot we talked about that the other day.
He's not going to dance.
I don't believe he is going to dance. He's driving to Craster's and really regretting it.
All right. Well, there we go. Minor teaser there for everybody that I'm pretty excited about these. Hopefully we'll have the prototypes in by the time you listen to this episode and we can be showing those off. So.
Exactly. You guys should go to Nashville.
www.conflictatthecastle.com.
Oh, I thought you were going to say conflictofinterest.com. I was like, hey, that's not fair.
Nope, entirely different. Okay, now it's cookies.
Would there be gluten-free cookies?
Cookies.
Maybe it's not your wife.
Oh
no! If it's
cookies,
Kristen is the cookies.
Well, yeah. I do have some bad news on the cookie front. We will not be able to have cookies on Saturday because. Since this is an actual venue we're going to be at the castle, they can only have actual like licensed food providers there. So homemade cookies won't fly. So we will have those on Sunday at Medicare's.
Can I get a refund on my ticket?
Just because of the cookies? I promise you, we're working on getting some pretty sweet food there.
Yes.
I actually started working on that this week.
But what if you want savory food?
That I was looking at yesterday was savory. So actually sweets are going to be the tough part.
What if you want sweet food?
So, Will, I'm gluten-free and low FODMAP.
Wait, what's FODMAP? You just made
yeah,
up that
oh,
up.
I, it is. I don't remember what it stands for, but I've heard it like 2 weeks ago.
I'll put it in. Yeah, it stands for, I don't even remember, fermentable oligo, wow. Dye, monosaccharides, and polyols.
That's
I don't know what any of those are.
So, it is many things.
Right, this feels like a
We definitely just fell into one.
Let's review cards.
It was It was nearly a danger zone, but I'm willing to just call it a pit right for now.
Someone read some bad circards.
I don't actually. I think one of them is going to be quite good.
Scott.
Unfortunately, it's not the type of deck I'd like, but it can be good. So I guess I'm reading it since I'm talking. So the first is a loyal 7-cost Stark card, Eddard Stark, with a mill and power icon, 6 strength, Lord and Small Council Chambered, renowned, and he has the dominance action if each character you control has a Stark affiliation. Kneel Eddard Stark to choose and kill a character with printed cost 4 or lower. Limit once per phase. And then we have a 2-cost non-loyal Stark attachment. It costs 2 or it can print the shadows for 1. Attach a character against the intrigue icon. Reaction. After you win a challenge in which attached character is attacking, look at the losing opponent's hand. If attached character is Eddard Stark or has the Maester trait, stand it. Limit once per phase. So this Eddard, I think, probably doesn't make the cut for a 7-coster. You really want it to do a bit more. Killing things is nice, but then you're spending your 7-coster and making it sit around till dominance phase just to kneel and kill something that's printed cost 4 or lower, which probably isn't good enough. And a 7-for-6 bicon with renown is nice, but also probably not good enough in Stark. The tome, however, I think can be pretty bonkers on Fast Eddie. If you give Fast Eddie 3 icons and then have him stand, that's a lot of power really fast. And you could probably find another way to stand him because you're crossing. Stark. You could just win in a turn almost. So, yeah, Stark is the best house, and they'll continue to be, it seems like. It's probably not the best match, but if the Stark Crossing deck can become a thing, if you get a Northern Armory out, a Fast Eddie with a Tome on him, that's serious business. So I'm willing to give them a B-, I think, on the sake that the Tome might enable more rush strategies.
You picked the wrong Eddie for Melian's Tome. Prince Core Eddie, baby, I'm defending everything. No. I think the Tome is probably solid if you're running that kind of synergy. I don't think it's going to find a spot in a crossing deck. I just don't think it does enough because you only ever really want it on that one character.
Yeah, I don't think it's crossing, but I think there's a way you can close with that really fast.
Sure, but there's other attachments that stand, and I don't think the intrigue icon alone is necessarily worth it. I could be wrong, but I don't think it's worth it. I think it's a cool card. I like that it exists. I think it's really cool in Maesters, which isn't good, I'm aware, but I think it's really cool in Maesters. I just think it's a solid card. Not great, and awkwardly costed for being good. Again, I could be wrong. I'm the moron that didn't like Queen's Guard once upon a time, I think. So, there's no guarantee I'm right on Melian's Tome. It's just I tend to underrate attachments, much like Willful Occasions, and I don't see slotting this into anything but maybe a Kohor. And even then, I'm not sure what other 2-cost attachments I'm really, switching this out for. Eddard's kind of bad, I think. I just think both of the other Eddards are better, and the other 7-cost Eddard doesn't even see play to begin with, so who cares? People will try and make him a thing, but, he's not going to be a thing. I'm going to give Stark a nice standard C-.
I think I agree. I don't know that I have much more to add about Eddard. He's just too slow, really, for what he needs to do. Even, if you compare him with something like an Illyn Payne that gets the kill in Marshalling. Sure, there's a little bit of different pluses and minuses between the two, but there's also some opportunity cost here that something like Ill and Pain does not have, and in that you can't run the other Eddards, and Ill and Pain doesn't even see like strong play. So I think this Eddard's going to get passed over. Malian's Tome, though, I'm kind of interested in. I mean, I think the stand is going to be good, but I do also really like the ability to look at your opponent's hand. Knowing this is a start card, I really expected that ability to be opposite, and that you were going to have to show your hand to your opponent to stand the character. So it's kind of refreshing for it to be the opposite. I think that'll be pretty strong, especially maybe in decks that are wanting to use no surprises. If you've got initiative, you're going first. Maybe you can get a Malian's Tome out there, take a look at their hand, and then figure out whether this is the turn you do need to go ahead and use your no surprises or not, and save it and bank it for the turn it would have the most impact. So I think it's got some potential, if not blowing things wide open. So I'm going to give Stark overall probably a C, though maybe that Eddard should pull it down a little further.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with all of you. I think the dominance action sucks for Eddard. It just keeping him stood the whole time. I mean, sure, you've got Northern Armories and other cute ways to stand him, but at that point, I'd rather be using another Eddard. And I think Malian's Tome is a solid card. I'd run at least a one of it in like a Kohor or a Crossing deck, but a typical Stark Fealty deck, I mean, you're running Fast Eddie is primarily a one of or a two of and no other Maester, so it definitely only fits in some niche decks, although it's definitely the better of the two cards. I'd give a solid C plus to the two cards.
Okay. Who's up next?
I mean, you like Tyrell.
I like Tyrell. I'll take Tyrell. So first up, we've got a Maester Gorman. He's unique. Non-loyal, 4 cost, 2 strength, intrigue, and power icons. He has the Maester Trait, of course, and says, you may look at the top card of your deck. Then, once per phase, if the top card of your deck is a non-Tyrell card, you may marshal or play it as if it were in your hand. And then, Unexpected Guile. This one's attachment. Loyal, non-unique. There we go. 2 cost skill, character with shadow you control only, shadow 1, attached character gets plus 2 strength and gains insight. And then forced interrupt, when a challenge ends in which attached character is participating, return Unexpected Guile and attached character to shadows. So let's see, let's maybe start, I suppose, with the Maester, who I think is a very interesting effect. It's not something we've really seen before in second edition. We've seen a lot of top of deck manipulation of one kind or another, most of it in Tyrell, but never just this ability to just any time at all just look and see what it is, which I think is going to be pretty huge with, what? We got Scheming Septons, we've got Old Town, we've got what's his name? The knight that puts the top card of your deck into play, and then he goes to the top of your deck. Mullendor. Yeah. So I think there could really be something here, and the extra ability there is, I suppose, just kind of gravy. I mean, depends on what sort of home you can find for it. In just kind of standard Tyrell, it's going to be, what, 1 in every 5 cards, give or take, you're going to get a pseudo draw off of this by being able to play it. But the flip side is, if he goes into anything as any sort of Rose Banner, Now, suddenly, you're probably looking at 4 out of 5 cards, which, depending on how much income you have, it means he could be a marshalling phase, draw, what, 2, 3, 4, maybe? If you just keep playing the top card of your deck, depending on what it is. Whew. I think
once per phase.
Oh, once per phase. Sorry, I'm busy reading the non-Tyrell. curses. Okay. Well, that's probably good, because I was about to say that would be pretty insane. So, there we go. Once per phase reigns that in a lot. At draw one, I mean, there are some decks that might want that. I'm Star for draw enough in Lannister. I might consider it. I don't know. Unexpected Guile looks really spicy, though. Mainly, here we go with Lannister. With the Lanny non-loyal guys, Robert Strong and Mandon Moore, I think those are the characters I most want to bring out of shadows over and over and over. And I, there we go, and Varys. Even potentially, well, no, I was about to say potentially Cersei, but she's also loyal, so can't use her. Maybe Littlefinger for some extra filtering.
Littlefinger's back.
I've been playing him 1x, I have to admit, and I've been pleasantly surprised. I wouldn't go all in on him, but I've been pleasantly surprised.
I want Varys and Starry Sept and the Olena's informants to get extra power challenges.
Okay.
So you can get all the power, then put them on the characters, then Varys in and out.
Put it on the character using the Star Sept. Okay, I was missing that a little bit. I mean, that could be pretty sweet. Yeah.
It's a little Shaga.
I'm surprised to hear a Shaga move like that from you, Scott. Tell me more.
I think that's about as Shaga as I get. And I don't even think it's super Shaga. I think it's something that if you build a deck with this, it should be able, it can possibly do. Because there's enough event search in Tyrell that you could play Support of the People in a 1x Starry Sept.
Yeah, I definitely think you could. And, you know, some of their, even on the Shadows end of things, some of their folks could help you push that power so you can get the Support of the People off. You know, Queen of Thorns has Shadows. The Shadows Knight of Flowers, honestly, isn't bad, that sort of thing. So, yeah, I could dig it. Actually, Shadows Knight of Flowers could kind of help power that deck you were talking about, right? He stands a Kingsguard, was it limit, like, twice after something comes out of Shadows?
I think so.
Yeah, so there you go.
Yeah, he's actually not bad. Yeah, it's just his cost slot is awkward with so many big costers in Tyrell already.
Sure, sure. I'm just thinking he could keep throwing challenges at those extra powers from the informers you were talking about. So, I don't know. I don't think I wound up giving Tyrell a rating for this. Gormon's neat. I think he's unique. I think Unexpected Guile is the real kicker here. So, I'm tentatively going to give Tyrell an A- out of this. I mean, they get 2 more draw cards, and I mean, yes, this doesn't work quite the same way as Clever Feint, but I think the reusability of some of these Shadows cards could lead to some really strong plays.
I don't know that I agree with a A. I mean, Gorman, I like Gorman more than I like Unexpected Guile. I mean, just non-loyal, look at the top of your cards, great. And should I say Conclave helps out? It helps out Conclave a little bit, even though I don't see anyone ever running Conclave yet. But I mean, it's kind of redundant in Tyrell decks. So just every character practically has insight, and they've got so many draw effects from their 3-cost shadow location to Renly to Scheming Septons and Old Town. I just don't see Tyrell ever running these cards. I mean, these are like Gorman's going to always be a banner card, and Unexpected Guile at one point. Like, what are you taking out to put that in? I mean, I'd give it like a C.
Whew. Here we go. We are diverging.
So, unexpected guile doesn't exist yet, is kind of the problem. It's a card that exists once the new Shadows agenda comes out. And you can just pack your deck full of Shadows cards in Terrell. Because Terrell doesn't really have enough Shadows to make it worth running in and of itself. Mm-hmm. Even Terrell Lion is going to be iffy. But once, like, you can just jam every faction Shadow cards in there, like, at that point, like, your Varuses become real, real cheap. And being able to do that twice for, like,
mm-hmm.
2 gold to bring them out or 1 gold to bring them out, and then 1 on this, because it's resolved, doesn't matter whether you win or lose. Is going to be really, really, really strong. Because Shadows cards are also going to be card hungry, except that they printed Siege Preparations. So,
I don't know why they did that.
Yeah, Siege Prep's a problem. That shit will be restricted real fast. Unexpected Guile is really solid in that deck. It's just not in any deck that exists right now, so it's hard to rate. I think Gorman's eventually going to be kind of busted. I think being able to look at the top part of your deck is going to cause all sorts of cute little janky interactive combos that are going to end up being really good. At worst, he's an extra power and draw guaranteed every turn from 2-cost location, and you want to help from Old Town. Yeah,
Old Town.
Like, Old Town and Gorman is real silly. Like, if you can stand Old.
They've already printed enough things for Old Town, so they're just going to keep doing it.
Yeah, this one's just, like, free, though, right? Like, there's no action involved except Old Town and having Gorman out.
I mean, sure, but like Gorman I said, it's just all of it's redundant, because the Scheming Sentence are essentially free.
Yeah, but it's a when thing, right? Like, Scheming Sentence have, like, when do you want to get your power from Scheming Sentence versus when do you want to get it from Gorman?
Yeah.
Like, generally speaking, extra draw in Marshalling has extra value, right? So, like, although the power has less value in Marshalling, so I generally value a card over a power, especially early game. And late game, there's nothing to say that you can't just do it later anyway. Luckily, it's attached to a fairly crap body. I mean, he also makes Mullendore a lot less dangerous. A lot of little things like that. Mm-hmm. I think he's basically a one-of in any drill deck that's running any of that kind of shenanigans, but not more. Which probably makes him like a B-minus card. And I think Unexpected Gal's probably around a C-plus, B-minus. Really hard to tell until we get our hands on that agenda, but I think I'm comfortable with a B-minus for the faction.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I'm the closest to Aaron out of this pack compared to everyone else. I think Unexpected Guile is going to be real good. I actually think the Shadow package in Tyrell isn't there, but the location is real good too. So if the agenda is what we assume it will be, or this enables further the banner package, maybe we just needed this one other piece to banner to probably Lion, maybe Sun. It'll be real good. I think on the back of Unexpected Guile, I can give them a B. I do think Maester Gorman is poor design, because it in a banner deck, it's like mock draw, and we've had draw B. Loyal all the time, but you're basically giving it banner draw. And you can build a deck just for him to go off pretty much, right? You can... In Magic, there's a card called Balsa Citadel now that can sometimes seem broken, and that's you pay life, basically, to play the top card of your deck, if you can play it. And this is, you can always play the top card of your deck. If it was once per phase, that isn't awful. It's like draw an extra card almost, possibly. But if it's not once per phase, and you have the minimum, actually it doesn't have to be the minimum. If you're running Tyrell main, you could just have Maester Gormans as your only Tyrells, and everything else not Tyrell. And then play every other card from your deck, so it's always unlimited extra things. And that might actually be good, I'm not sure. I just thought of that off my head. But being able to play every card on the top of your deck always, always have unlimited extra draws, except if you hit your Maester Gormans.
Not unlimited, because that's what Zach caught me on. It's once. Yeah.
Oh, once per phase, yeah.
I mean, but I still think that has potential.
It doesn't have as much potential.
Yeah.
That was gross. It still is not the best. I don't see a reason that it's beneficial for the game to print him. Anyway, I'm willing off the back of the ability for Gorman to probably be figured out a way to be abused. Also being great in a Maester's deck, because cards are most likely not going to be Tyrell unless you're running a Tyrell Maester's. And Unexpected Guile probably becoming a Lynch print card to give him a solid B to B plus.
All right. Zach, do you want Night's Watch or Barra?
Doesn't matter to me. I'll take Night's Watch.
Go for it.
All right. First card is a 2-cost non-loyal Maester Mullen. 1 strength. He's got a military and an intrigue icon. Action, Neo Maester Mullen to choose a character and a challenge type. Until the end of the phase, that character cannot be declared as an attacker in the challenges of that type. And then there's a non-loyal 1-cost attachment. It's a condition, guard duty. Night Watch character only. Reaction after character is declared as a defender. Kneel guard duty to stand attached character. I hate both of these cards. I don't like them. I mean, Maester Mullen he's cute. Like I just, the best Nightwatch decks are arguably Choke and Builder. So why would you put Mullen in there? It's just the redundancy doesn't exist, and he just doesn't fit any theme of those two good decks. And then guard duty is just absolutely horrible. It's supposed to go on Nightwatch characters only, but it's a condition. I mean, how many characters besides John, and I think that's it, can take conditions? Like, these are just not great cards. Like, I give this a...
It can go on Sam. Sam on guard duty is very deadly.
I mean, him and like can
there is a real.
I mean,
answer.
Can Owen Owen can take attachments, right? Like,
No. There's a real answer.
Like, I don't know. I just overall, like, with my lack of knowledge of Nightwatch, I give these cards Stewart. A D. Like, they are not great in my opinion. I could be proved wrong. I've been wrong many a time, but in the limited vacuum of knowledge I have of Nightwatch, I don't see these cards as being good at all.
I mean, I don't think they're good either. D is probably fine. Mullen is just going to be a worse Craven type of effect. Moldtown doesn't see play. Granted, it's not a body. But it still is not good.
Cunning Steward is where guard duty is meant to shine.
Cunning Steward. I literally have to go look that card.
That's the one that gains every icon when it defends.
Yep. It gains every icon when it defends. It takes attachments. Unfortunately, this can't ambush or come out of shadow, so if it gets milked, it's just a sad little dude. But if your opponent doesn't have milk, it's a tricon. It's a tricon that can defend 2 challenges, and that's pretty good for a Tomas-style Night's Watch defense deck.
But Tomas that's like
the... Just builders.
Yeah, that's like the only deck it goes in, though.
Sure, but that's a deck that could be good, right? Like, it's coming like second or third in Stalic and shit like that.
Well, Thomas came second or third in Stalic, I wouldn't say. He's a hell of a good player.
Sure, but I would assume he would run this. I'm also finding a spot for Maester Mullen in Builders. Like, without any question.
I think Maester Mullen is not that bad. I mean, he's cheap. He's got 2 icons built in. And he potentially mucks up opponents' challenges at a pretty low cost.
Yeah,
I don't think he's bad, but I don't think he's good.
There might be some unsynergy here too, I think.
So at worst, he's just 2 good icons. Like, he's, assuming the wall is out, and like that's obviously the deck that he's going in. Mm-hmm. He's a 2-for-2 with two icons that the deck wants because they have 1,000 power icons. But like, what he really does is he says, okay. I'm going to lose intrigue, but like I've got everything set up, but like I can't win enough intrigue to stop Cersei's 800 because I just can't find like enough strength, or I can't find my abandoned stronghold or whatever nonsense. So like, she's going to get too much power too fast. How about she just can't participate in intrigue? How about Jamie just can't participate in power? How about Gregor can't participate in military? Right? Like, any of that is, like, the icons are nice, and, like, a nice cheap source of those two icons and builders is good, but the ability to say, okay, big problem character that's going to do big problem thing. Like, even Core Bob, who can get up to, like, 28 strength, like, with builders, I can usually defend that on power, but I can't always defend that on military. So if I can just be like, okay, Mullen says you can't military me with Bob, like, now I can win military and not have to worry about that. Now I can win power, like, just stuff him on power and not have to worry about that. And I think that's really, really useful. I think these cards are very solid in getting a B+.
Ooh, I don't know if I'm that high. I'm not very high on guard duty, but I think I'm definitely with you on Mullen. So I think I'm probably giving Night's Watch like a C+ out of this, maybe a B-. I like Mullen quite a bit.
I would give him a C, and I'm probably the person that has had the most tourney success with builders. I don't think I find room for him. Maybe I do, just because the icons are the harder icons from the have. But I think he's just like a worse Craven on a stick. I think I'd rather have Moltown.
Oh, wow.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Was not
I actually like Moltown
that.
More than most people.
Those are fighting words.
I don't dislike Moltown at all. I just like that Mullen is cheaper.
Moltown, like, I think it's actually good on a Trade Routes turn for builders.
Yeah, I don't think builders can really run Trade Routes anymore. Between Vic and Bob, I think you need Flea Bottom and Builders.
Maybe you're right. I haven't played Builders in a while, but
yeah, it's like, and if not, like, if you're not running that, you're probably running Wars. Like, because
the 401.
Well, the 401. Either way, the 401 has basically said you don't need Trade Routes anymore, right?
Maybe you mean at the gates.
At the gates, yeah. Like, I like, since then, Trade Routes has just been very extra.
I think in builders, I agree, but
it's a reflood plot. Yeah, yeah. Builders, it's a reflood plot.
But you don't need it because you just have so much time.
In a Thomas style deck, I think you still run Trade Routes because you're going to do the stupid bullshit with Crow as the Trixie Bird. But I in builders, I agree. I don't think it's worth it.
Yeah, well, and so, like, you don't need that to reflood because you've got the natural +2 gold. You're assuming you've got the gift, and you've almost certainly got, like, it's hard to overstate just how good at keeping everything going the new one-drop econ card and the 3-drop builder are. Like, the fact that that draws you a card just makes it completely absurd.
It's pretty gravy.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think we're relatively about it on Night's Watch. Did anyone not grade?
Nope. I think we all did.
All right. Aaron, you get to have the Barris.
Okay. Sir Elden Estermont is a 5/4 mill power, loyal Baratheon card, knight and lord, choose and stand a feral location, limit once per round. Shadow of the South is a shadows only event. With a Shadow 1, it is also loyal. Action, choose and kneel any number of locations with a total printed cost of 3 or lower. If there's a kingdom plot revealed, return Shadow of the Throne to your hand instead of placing it in your discard pile. Elden is fine. I don't think he's really good, like, at all. Someone might figure out a way to bust him. But, outside of keeping everything dealt with Bob, but then being able to stand your key location, or being able to stand a Black Cells. I don't super duper love it.
Blackwater Bay, man.
Yeah, you get Blackwater Bay's reaction to the start of the phase, so I don't think that's really useful.
You mean Blackwater Rush? Doesn't exist
Blackwater
yet.
Blackwater Rush, sorry.
What's Blackwater Rush?
The card that is coming.
What is it?
Blackwater Rush.
Yes. Stop repeating the name.
After a card you control comes out of shadow, kneel it and give a Baratheon character a power.
Oh, okay. Sure. That's fine. With the new Shadows agenda, I suppose that's probably going to be good. Then you'd want to do that. Sure. And then that's 2 power around, which is pretty solid. Okay. as is, I don't think he sees much play. I'm literally looking through a couple of my Barrow plot decks right now for the second card. Three kingdoms in that one. Luckily, we just spent the day building a bunch of Barrow decks, right? Jeez. Kingdoms in that one. I'm looking at like two more. Like, because kingdom is real common, so everyone's just going to be like, yeah. Kingdoms are in all Barrow decks, right?
Well, and it's not just yours if there's one revealed, so your opponent could have it as well.
Fair. So another two in that one. You don't really want to rely on your opponent, right?
But it might give you an extra turn somewhere that you could trigger it.
I don't have a...
Yeah, my seven deck only has
two. Yeah, I don't have a Barrow deck that has more than two. So I'm not sure this is good unless you specifically build for it. I think it would be really, really good if it were built for, but I'm not sure giving up plot flexibility is necessarily the way to go about that.
I mean, it's also worth looking at what it hits on the opposite side, right? Like, does it have good enough targets to be worthwhile?
Definitely.
I think it might.
Well, that depends on the meta.
Well, it does. Okay. So, I'm thinking at the top end of things, we're probably looking at what's it hit in Stark and Greyjoy, right?
Yeah. Probably. So it's not necessarily hitting anything super great in Greyjoy, but
you can probably pick up some extra value on some random warships, like if they're running some of the Scouting Vessel, the Zero Drop.
Yeah, you can hit infinite Scouting Vessels.
Yeah.
That's the
Of those, and then a couple random, Longship Maiden Banes or some other like two cost
warships. Okay, Longship. Yeah.
Well, right. Yeah, I mean,
it turns down their Vic.
But Skagos is the real target, right?
Yeah, Skagos and Fleabottom is
Synodact. Yeah,
well, and Northern Armory, I think, is probably worthwhile too.
Yeah, maybe.
Yes.
So there's some solid targets for this.
Cost producers too. In either house.
But I don't think that's worth three gold. If it's a...
No, it's not the zero cost reduced.
The zero cost...
The
I mean, I...
No, the zero cost reduced.
I think it's worth it.
I don't think that's worth even three if you... gold if for a one time unless you can re-trigger it.
Yeah.
Well, it's good. It's a good closer. I mean, $3 to kneel your entire backboard of your opponent and then just have your way with them. Like, if you're playing Sea of Blood, he's like, all right, Winterfell's note. You know,
you're not going to close the game now. Printer cost three or lower.
Yeah.
Like, if it were infinite.
Oh, dang it.
If it could hit the wall at Winterfell.
Sorry.
And it would be great, right? Like, then it's definitely getting fit. But if it's a max printer cost of three.
Okay, yeah, I misread that card.
I just don't see people running the zero cost reducers.
Can you build a choke deck with Box Bob in this and not let any location stand and this choke their econ base?
And are you running a? Are you running a? What's that stupid card? No, you don't. What's the Reigns of Autumn?
Reigns of Autumn, where they can't get any income bonuses,
So I'm going to spoil something for you. This deck is bad. And then you're running Eldin, so you can stand your own stuff and get econ. Cool. Don't build that deck. It's bad. These cards are...
I want to build it, Aaron. Can we build it after?
No. just say choke to Jesse, and you know he'll want to build it. I don't know. These cards are probably good, but they're more good in theory than actuality, so I'm going to go C+.
I think Estermont, if he isn't good now, will certainly be good. I actually think Laughing Lord to me has always been on the cusp of being a good card, right? He makes Laughing Lord good. But besides that, I think with the Shadows stuff, the Shadows, Black Cells, and Blackwater Rush, I think he's very good with. So I think he is going to be a card that sees a lot of play if he isn't already. I do think the 5/4 with those icons and Barrow is a little awkward. He's probably competing for the same slot with Bastard of Nightsong, although I think they go in different decks.
Bastard of Nightsong goes in different decks.
Oh, ouch.
Sure. No, I think they're both good. I'd probably give it a B minus. I think Shadow of the Throne depends on the deck, and I think Estermont does too. But I think the decks that want these cards are really gonna enjoy them.
I think I agree with Scott. There are gonna be some decks that want these. I think Estermont is one of those open ended cards that is really hard to rate right now. Baratheon maybe doesn't have as much to abuse with as I would want, but I mean, really, I think FFG has a pretty good track record lately of seeding us these type of cards, and then a year later, us looking back and going, "Oh, yeah, they had a bunch of releases lined up to enable this after that." So,
if Bower Shadows is good, this might go up to an A pack for Bower.
Yeah.
Because these are both great in Bower Shadows.
One is literally a Shadows card. I can get behind it. And I think more location control is good to have in the game. This is repeatable. This could hit multiple targets. I think it's got some options, even if it's not super cheap. So I think I'm willing to give Vera a B out of this pack.
So Shadow of the Throne, it's still... Obviously, it's the better of the two cards, and I think it's decent. I mean, again, $3 to kneel most of your opponent's backboard is nothing to just shake a stick at. It's definitely worth it. And then Estermont, he's definitely going to get better later down the road, but I don't see any card with the exception of like Black Cells or like maybe even Dragonstone Castle to where like that he can take advantage of his ability.
I mean, you could also just use him as an income boost, right? So you can kneel the dominance limited location, gain $2, use him again, get another $2.
Yeah, but I mean, at that point, I'd rather just play a better dude.
I'm not saying that's great, but. That's something you can think about. It is kind of ramping your
time. I mean, if somebody just printed a character that was like 5/4 military power knight lord and then had a +2 gold icon on it, I would say there's a bunch of decks I would jam a single copy of that in. He wouldn't quite be that, but close enough that I wouldn't say that's a terrible play.
Yeah, no, I think...
I mean, but then it's like 3 turns to pay for himself. It's just like it's an investment. I don't think it's worth it.
I mean, how many cards do you ever just make that? Does it pay for itself calculus on? Only income producing ones. Like, do you make that calculus on like Core Robert or I don't know, the Mountain? Like nobody does that there. So I don't think that's fair to say.
I mean
I don't think he's great, but I mean, the body you also have to take into account.
Yeah, I mean, the body, I think the body's weak. 4 strength is always, like, Targ's going to try to come out of the woodworks with this recent restricted list. I don't like 4 strength dudes that are unique and just, like, especially Baron Knights could be better, but I think Baron Shadows is definitely going to be the better deck in the long run. So, I mean, I don't think Estermont's going to see play immediately. I think Shadow of the Throne goes into decks right now. But I give it a good C+. I just don't like Estermont, but I think Shadow of the Throne is definitely the best one here, or of the Bearer cards.
Okay. Well, should we move to the next house before we get too bogged down going in circles on Bearer?
Yeah. I don't think we are bogged down. We were decent.
Barris finally.
No, I think that was decent.
Decent house after this box, so we're all pumped because they haven't been for since Corset.
A long time. Oh yeah, long, long time. Okay. Anybody mind if I jump on Lannister?
Please do.
Sweet. All right. First up, we have the unique Chiswick. He's loyal. 3 cost, 2 strength, military and intrigue icons. He's an ally. He has pillage. And then reaction after you win a challenge in which Chiswick is participating, discard the top card of your deck to draw 1 card. And then we have Hands of Gold, a loyal Lannister event. 2 cost, the song as a reaction after you win an entry challenge by 5 or more strength as the attacking player. Choose a character controlled by the losing opponent and return it to its owner's hand. Max, 1 per challenge. You know, I think these are actually pretty decent for Lannister. They don't quite blow me away, but they are kind of like solid middle of the road, like upper middle of the road cards that Lannister has not seen a lot of lately. Maybe the bourgeois of Lannister cards, so to speak. I mean, Chiswick is more draw for yourself. The pillage out of Lannister is still pretty much just something they tack it onto cards. I want to say at random. There's obviously a theme that these are Gregor's, you know, pillagers here. Gregor's dogs or whatever they were called. But, like, they don't really do anything. Lannister doesn't have the effects to utilize that like they've given to Greyjoy. But Chiswick is actual card draw, which I'll definitely take, especially on a relatively cheap body. Chucking from the top of your deck isn't really a cost, for the most part, though having lost multiple games in a tournament weekend on cards in deck tiebreaker, I will admit that's something I'll watch. And then Hands of Gold, I like. It seems like a reasonable challenge control event. It's not quite a put to the sword. I mean, there's less saves that could prevent this. Though, of course, duplicates will, which are by far the most common. But on the other hand, it doesn't permanently remove the character unless you pull it on the intrigue claim right after this. You know, they could potentially replay it. So there's some trade-offs, but I do really like schemes out of Lannister. Especially with Lanny's challenge phase gold production. I don't think this necessarily telegraphs itself as much as Pinch of Powder can, even with the Shadows window that Pinch of Powder can abuse. So that seems tempting. I mean, I think this seems like a solid like B+ for Lanny here. Overall,
Chiswick is awesome. He's a one of in every Lanny deck, just like Pacell is a one of in every Lanny deck. They now have two characters that can get them an extra card a turn. Seems solid. His cost is a very minor cost. It is real, despite what certain people in certain Lannister chats say. The way the game is built is such that a card in your discard pile, given the limited value, could hit the wrong thing, and like that's annoying, and it changes the calculus of the game, knowing that you can't possibly hit a thing again. But whatever, he still goes a one of in every deck, and you still trigger him basically every time until you're into the deck yourself, because card draw is good, and Lannister is desperate for some. Although, again, siege preparations should make that not the case. People just aren't there yet. Hands of Gold is awesome. It's basically Pinch. Having more Pinch is good. Being able to use both this and Pinch in one turn is very, very good. Assuming that you can actually end tiers. Yeah, everything on that one challenge is real awesome. Assuming that Hand Destruction were ever at all good, this would be truly phenomenal. And it might be, because Cersei is very annoying if you can get that Shadows deck going. But again, Siege Preparations. So, I don't know. I think these are both very good cards. I think a B+. I don't think either is great, but both very good.
Yeah, I'm a little bit less sold on Hands of Gold just because Tears is so efficient. You don't have to win by 5 then, but the requirement that they don't have an intrigue icon is the downside there. If you're going to do both, then obviously you do both. But I don't necessarily believe Hands of Gold is that great. Chiswick, as you mentioned, is a one of in every Lanny deck. He's a slightly worse Pycelle, but I still think you take it, especially with the lack of draw that Lanny has. So I'm willing to give them a B, just because I'm a little less sold on the gold.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with everything you guys said. Chiswick is draw on Lanny is just so unbelievably necessary that any amount of draw, if it says inside or draw, you're going to put it in your deck. Hands of Gold, I disagree with Scott a little bit. I think it's better than what he thinks it is. I just, if you're running it, you're running tiers, you're running pinch, you're running all those challenge actions where on that entering challenge, you just turn the entire game. Like I think that in combination with other effects like Tower of the Hands coming back, like it's all those effects combined make for a really devastating deck. I mean, I'd give it a good B+.
Okay. Are we on to Greyjoy then?
Who's doing Greyjoy?
Not me.
I'll do it. The first one is a non-unique Drowned God ally trait, King's Landing Proselyte. It's a tough word to say. Intrigue and power icon, 4 strength, shadow 4, action, kill a standing Greyjoy character to put King's Landing Proselyte into play from shadows. The second card is a 0-cost attachment. It's a weapon, worship location only, action during a military challenge, kneel attached location to give participating Greyjoy character +3 strength until the end of the challenge. These cards are weird. They're not bad. Like Greyjoy gets their 4-drop that you can cheat into play, but the action, I mean, it makes sense-ish. I mean, obviously you want to kill the Apostle, you want to kill your Fanatics potentially to cheat them back into play if you don't have Grey Goal out. I just the Proselyte's fine. He's a big body. I don't know what you would want to kill that you couldn't kill with other things. The warship location, it's decent. I mean, you could put it on your non-kneeling warships like Kraken, Black Wind, those ones. I mean, it's cute. I'd rather just run the Iron Fleet Scouts and call it that rather than trying to find cards to take out and put that into. Because if you're running those cards, you're probably going to run 3 of them. I mean, Greyjoy Sea of Blood might see a spot for it, but I'd rather. I mean, yeah, I think it is. It's a little tougher to run without your Fanatics, but I think it's still good.
Yeah, I think it's still good.
I mean, I'd give these cards a C+. I mean, the Proselyte's a weird character. Like it's a big body. I just don't know what you'd like. I don't know, cheating him in for free, I don't think it's worth it.
So go ahead, Scott.
No, I was gonna say I think the Proselyte is very worth it in a Drowned God deck. I think you want to be killing these things and bringing them back with and getting your Drowned Disciples to get power, so you can kill your Vince, gain a power, then bring him back, gain a power on your disciple, keep refilling and changing around your dead pile and deck. Basically, you want everything in the cycle, right? So I think the Proselyte is going to be crazy good in that. The Outfitted for War, I don't think is anything too special. I think I agree that the Iron Fleet Scouts in general are better. I mean, maybe you find a slot for one or two if you really want to go all in on the Sea of Blood, but probably not. So I'll give them a C+. I'd be on the back of the Proselyte being very good for the deck he's very good for.
I mean, but for the Drowned God argument, wouldn't you rather kill it with Given to the Drowned God or Old Grey Goal? Like, his kill effect just seems underwhelming to me. Like, he's not coming out of the dead pile. Like, he exists.
I feel like that deck,
and that's kind of just what he's doing
in kill effect. And I think this is very reasonable addition.
Another way.
Doesn't it?
No.
Yeah, but I mean, doesn't it already have it?
You've listed what, 2 other ones?
I think it does.
3, I suppose.
Well, I mean, so Greyjoy's Son is obviously the in my opinion, the better of the 2 Drowned God decks. You've already got the Raiders coming out of your dead pile. You've already got the Fanatics. You're able to kill them with the Fanatics. Just, I mean, I don't know. I would rather just run other kill effects that let me draw cards, like, and then.
So it's hard to find enough kill effects, and given other factions, like particularly Barra, they can make it really hard to get things into your dead pile if you don't see that one particular draw card. Because, like, you don't have to necessarily in a, what's the name of the attachment that gets Babo all the power in the world? No. The new one.
Lightbringer?
What is it? Azor Ahai Born Again or something?
Yeah, Azor Ahai Reborn.
Reborn.
Azor Ahai Reborn. Sure. Any deck like that doesn't really need to, like, make military, right? Like, you can just intrigue power. Bob's getting 2 to 4 power that way, kneeling half your board. You keep an eye on the opponent's hands with your 800 effects that look at opponent's hands, and if they have a fanatic, you just don't trigger character abilities, which means they have to draw one particular card or use a reset to try and get that out. Proselyte just gives another option. And better, it's another option that's a 2 for 4. Right? Like, it's not another option that's, like, inefficient or difficult. It's another option that's costing you 2 to get 4 and giving you an option of when you want to do that. Like I've managed to, after a few kill effects, get both a Desert Raider and a Fanatic stuck in play, and there's nothing in the dead pile for them to really do. Right? Like, now, King's Landing Proselyte. We're right back to starting the cycle. Cool, I killed one, now the other's dead. Now I've got the cycle all over again. There's nothing you can do about it. I think this alone is an A card. I think Outwit, Outfitter for War might as well just go straight into a binder and not exist. So I refuse to waste time talking about it. But King's Landing Proselyte means A.
Yeah.
Also, I would not be shocked if Drowned God wins one of the major nationals in the next couple of months.
I think Greyjoy Sun is real good.
It would have been nice if a little bit more was restricted from that, but there you go.
I don't know. I don't think there's. I mean, you have Return of the Fields. You've got Naga's Ribs. I mean, you've got ways to sacrifice and get cards into the dead pile. I'm going to put my foot down on this. I just don't see what you're replacing out of an already tight deck.
You just lost 3 cards in it because the restricted list. But regardless of that, like, ultimately, what it comes down to is, in a long tournament, there are going to be games, no matter how tight your deck is, where you're going to wish you had extra redundancy. And that's what this is. It's extra redundancy. You want as many ways to do the exact same things as possible, as long as they're relatively efficient. And 2 for 4 is pretty damn efficient.
Yeah, I mean, I agree it's an efficient card. I feel like Drowned God decks are just so tight. And I mean, I could be proven wrong. Like, I'm not saying it's a horrible card. I'm not saying you're not going to run it. But I mean, I just personally, I feel as if it won't slot into all the Drowned God decks.
Well, I think we may be at an agree to disagree point there. I don't know. I mean, just as far as, like, I'm not sure what new arguments there is there. Zach's pretty firmly on one side, and I think it sounds like all three of us are on the other side there, that Drowned God is going to want it. So I'll be very curious to hear from listeners who you think has the right of it on the proselyte. I think everybody's all on the same page that Outfitted is terrible, right? So the less I say about an attachment that needs a specific type of location, the better. So I'm just going to give Greyjoy, maybe a B+. I like the proselyte a lot. Outfitted for War should maybe drag their overall rating further, but we'll see.
Outfitted for War drug it down real bad for me.
I just ignored it and didn't rate it.
That was probably the safer call.
Scott, you want Targ or Martell?
I'd rather take Martell, probably, although I think Targ is the better house in the pack.
So, which do you want, Scott?
I said I'd rather take Martell.
Okay. John Connington is a 6-for-5 non-loyal military intrigue Targaryen character. He is a House Connington Lord with Shadows 5 and Renown. Reaction. After John Connington comes out of Shadows, choose and reveal a card you control in Shadows. If it's a non-event card, it costs 4 or lower, put it into play. And then the Dragon Pit. 3-cost loyal location. King's Landing. Each character whose controller controls fewer cards in Shadows than you gets -1/3. Connington is in every single Shadows deck of the once the new agenda comes out, because coming out for 3 and then putting a 4 lower into play is amazing. As is now, his only really good target is his only really good in faction target is Aegon, because he also immediately works with Varys. Which seems important.
Yeah, that printed
cost. Printed cost for him, right?
I like that.
Yeah.
So, those. He's also not half bad with the Shadows. With the current Shadows agenda. What is that, Assault?
Yeah, Assault.
Yeah, because being able to pop out a Crown of Gold for free and getting this really, really solid body seems pretty good, too. I just like him a lot. I think he's a really, really nice card. I don't think he's the best card in the game, but I think he does a lot of things that all these decks want, and he goes 1-2 of in basically all those decks. Dragon Pit I'm less sold on. It was one of my favorite decks in First Edition. I played it for basically a whole season to really good success. -1/strength in First Edition doesn't mean the same thing as -1/strength in Second, and I feel like for Targ, making sure you have more cards in Shadows is not always going to be easy.
Well, and I think the big kicker for me versus First Edition is First Edition Targaryen had, what, 2 different Shadows burn effects that could potentially...
They
could potentially sit in Shadows to power this up, and then at the right moment come out and stack with this to kill stuff. And they don't have that in second ed, which I think is a big drawback.
That is a huge drawback. I mean, I think this is good. I just don't think it's the centerpiece that it was in First Edition. It goes in my Shadows deck, right? Like, if I'm running a Targ Shadows deck, it's going to be in it. I just don't think that it's like everyone in the meta has to prepare for this deck at all times good in quite the way it was in First Edition. That said, again, it's good. It goes in the decks. It's just, I've found down on it because it was so good in First Edition, and it's just good in Second Edition. John is kind of a nut. I hope I'm wrong about Dragon Pit. I hear that DC, old DC, is coming back, and hopefully they do something cool with this and walk in and prove us all wrong. But, like, who the hell knows? So I'm going to give it a nice, I'm going to give the faction a B+, because I think they're both very, very good cards.
Yeah, I think they're both very good, too. I don't think it could... I mean, I'm not a First Edition player, but the numbers... Ruin his variant, right? Like, strength never got as high as it got now.
It was basically before it was basically the top most of the time.
Exactly. So if it's terminal at 4, it's not as hard to get there as it is to get terminal at 7.
Yep.
So a straightforward everything can be burnt location like that can never be as powerful, just by nature of the design of the game and the abstract of how characters' strength works. But off that, I think John Connington is probably going to be at least a one of in probably every probably one of an every Targ deck. Maybe you might not find room for him, but he'll be on the cusp, and most other decks that have a decent amount of Shadows characters probably will play a two of. Dragon Pit, I think you put it in every Targ deck pretty much. Unless you have like no Shadows characters and you think that they will have Shadows characters, basically. But I think the majority of Targ decks in this meta will at least have a couple Hired Assassins or something like that, and then you could just use this for incidental value. So I'll give the house an A-. I think you're going to see these cards a lot and all over. I don't think they're meta breakers, but I think they help get to that point.
Yeah, I mean, these cards they're definitely the best in the pack. Connington's going to be a three of in every single Kingdom of Shadows deck. Dragon, like Targ Kingdom of Shadows is going to run three of with a Dragon Pit. Like both these cards will be 3x in a Targ Kingdom of Shadows deck. Like, they're very good cards. I mean, I assume Targ's going to get at least one more burn, because why not? And that'll just make Dragon Pit just exponentially better. But I mean, these cards are just both phenomenal. I'll give them both A's, because they're going to be good, and I think they are good now.
Why are you running three John Connington?
Clever feint, man.
Well, you can just like march him away and just trigger him again.
I mean, do you want to do that?
Clever feint him. It's after he comes out of Shadows, and he's really expensive.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing that I'm not hearing enough talk about that I keep staring at is that renown. I think that little bit of extra speed for these slower Shadows decks is going to be really solid.
You know what he might be really good with is that Martell Shadow Spy lady.
Yeah, drop him out of Shadows and then all of a sudden there's a full board against you. That seems solid.
Yeah, so if you can get that and then you have the Clever Feint, that I think all day. He just keeps bringing in more value.
Yeah.
It might be amusing in like a Tyrell Kingdom deck to chain something out with him via Queen of Thorns. Pull him out with Queen, pull something else out after that. Could really change up a board state.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I like these, though. As I said, Dragon Pit was an entire archetype in First Ed, but it's going to be, I mean, it's theoretically strong, but significantly weaker than being able to be an archetype like it was in First Ed. So I like these cards. I think these are very solid tools for Targ, but not overwhelming. Here I am in the B range again for these, I think. Maybe B.
All right. So we have a 6-cost Loyal Martell, Arion. Intrigue power icons, 5 strength lady. She can be played from Shadows for 5 and a stealth. And as the reaction, after a card comes out of Shadows under your control, choose a character. Until end of phase, that character loses a challenge icon of your choice. Limit 3 times per round. And we have Pit of Snakes, which is a 2-cost Loyal Martell event. Challenges action, choose a character with no challenge icons and place a poison token on it. At the end of phase, if that character still has that poison token, remove it and kill that character. Max 1 per phase. So this Arion, I don't think can find a spot, even in a dedicated Shadows deck, compared to the other Arions. The other Arions, just they're both better. To be honest, and taking away one icon isn't as much of a game-changing effect as being able to bounce a character, yours or your own, plus having insight, or being able to bounce in one of your characters after using in a challenge, an Arion challenge, that is. I think just the value isn't there, especially at the 6-cost slot. And Pit of Snakes, I don't think the value is there either for a 2-cost event. To get someone down to having no icons usually takes a bit of work. so it is a bit finicky in that sense. Plus, you have to draw at the right time and have two gold in challenges. It just doesn't seem worth the cost, so I'll probably give this about a C. I don't think either of these cards are bad, but I don't think they're cards you're going to see play. Arion, because of the opportunity cost of Arions, and Pit of Snakes, just for how expensive and the fact that they need to have no icons is a bit of work to add to the price of a two-cost event.
I strongly disagree with the Pit of Snakes. I think that card is amazing. I mean, Shadow City Bastard just blanks anything that's five drop and under, and you just put a poison token on whoever that is. For the higher characters, I mean, you can kill Drogon with a Starfall trigger. You can kill Gregor with a Starfall trigger. Like, I think I think it's easier to remove icons than you think. I don't know. I just think Pit of Snakes with just Shadow City Bastard alone being able to say that five cost guy is going to die.
I mean,
now.
I hope you're right. That is amazing. Mainly being a Martell player. That's a 2-for-1 trade. I mean, you could have Flea Bottom, so it isn't exactly a 2-for-1 trade, right? But I think there are just more efficient, reliable ways to remove in Martell. That's what Martell does the best. And yeah, I think killing Drogon and stuff is nice, but usually I just let my plots do that, right? In Martell, you could be running Duel quite often, Dohaurus, Morghulis, Southern Messenger I'd probably rather have at this type of spot. I just think the opportunity cost, like, I don't think it's a bad card, but I think the opportunity cost of what you're giving up for a card that has more requirements to make than other ones. But I hope I'm wrong.
So as a Martell player, I'm just really excited when people play Gregor or Drogon against me. Like, that's a mighty big investment for a card that's really going to spend a lot of time just sitting there looking funny. Like, that's a just really expensive fire throw. I can kill it, probably, but like, I usually don't really feel any need to rush to. But
that's like, kind of how I feel too. Like, there's better removal that we can do in Martell. Like, I'd rather have a Blade and a Tears.
I mean, a Vengeance for Ellie, and this costs a lot. There's a lot of things, right? Like, I don't know if this is bad. I know that, like, I'm not sold. Like, it might be really good, but
it's
I'm not sure
to not have to win a
if it is really good.
But if you're like, already taking the icons, like, I feel like winning the challenge is going to be easier.
Yeah, if you already took the icons, you can get the tears off.
I feel like a cool thing to do with this. Well, if you have a Desert Raider and a Prince's Pass, right? You're basically at zero icons, and now you don't have to sack your Prince's Pass and waste that. Which I like a lot, because I like Princess Pass a lot. But, like, that's still a 2-gold investment, which also Princess Pass was to begin with. So, like, about this. Like, yeah. None of it's singing to me. Like, it's just...
It's
it
a card
be good.
For a card.
It's gonna
I mean,
a fair
if you're running Dorn as you're restricted, then you're going to have card advantage, and that puts this up quite a bit. I think in a deck that runs Dorn as they're restricted... and 7 cost Doran, maybe this is good, but...
Well, and, like, Nightmare... Look, there's options, and, like... So, like, the best Martell deck right now, even though I kind of got bored with it and stopped playing it, is still probably the Cohort. That, like, wins every game, you just have to learn
Aaron.
To play it really, really fast. Does this have a home in that?
Did Aaron drop out?
Like, I don't even fit tears in that usually. It's just so hard to find space. None of this is easy. I think it's an interesting card. Arion goes in new Shadows agenda decks and nothing else. Because old Shadows agenda decks want big Arion because she has a more impactful effect. But this Arion is very good in City of Shadows or City or Kingdom, whatever it is, of Shadows decks, because they should be bringing massive stuff out every turn, and you should be able to take three icons almost every round, which seems important and good.
I mean, I don't know. I think this Arion has some real potential. Like, there's a lot of upside to a control effect like this that can be triggered a lot of times in a round. I mean, it may need to be a kingdom deck to have all of the shadows triggers to power it, but I like it. It's got stealth, so you can use her to push Tears of Liss or Poison Coin for some kill, which sends me to the second point that you can do that sort of thing. You probably don't need Pit of Snakes. I mean, I like that you don't have to win a challenge, but you still have to do other stuff to get to the point where Pit of Snakes can actually kill something. So I'm kind of wary. What's that, Scott?
Sorry, someone knocked on my door.
Oh, no problem. No problem. I thought you were saying something about the cards for a second.
No, I forgot. I forgot to put myself on mute. Sorry about that.
No problem. Do you need to answer anything?
No, I answered. I went on mute after I realized that it wasn't on mute.
Okay. All right. 3, 2, 1, go. So overall, I'm torn here, but I really love this Arion. So I think I'm going to give... I mean, she goes in a very specific Martell deck compared to other editions of her, but I think she's going to be a really strong option in those Shadows decks. So I'm willing to go ahead and give Martell an A-, despite Pit of Snakes.
So the things you have to do to make Pit of Snakes work are just easy. There's so much icon removal in Martell that it's quite easy to just point at a character and say that character's going to die with Pit of Snakes. And you're not going to pay for it because you're obviously running the Water Gardens as well. I don't see how this is a bad card. You don't have to win a challenge. All you have to do is play a Martell deck that removes icons, which is one of the more powerful Martell decks. So, I mean, I think Pit of Snakes is an A. I think the Arianne is a good C, so I'll cut in the middle and give both the cards a B.
I think Arianne is better, but I think that Arianne is... I think they're both solid and both about a B anyway. So I'm at the same rating for a different reason. Scott's not back, so let's do some death cards. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, rate him.
I thought I already did. I don't even remember what I gave him. I think maybe a C+ or something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I think you were the first one to rate.
Yeah, he was.
Now that you mention it.
Yeah, I think I gave him a C+.
Okay. Who's up on neutrals then? Is it back around to me now?
It should be you, yeah.
Okay. We've got a unique, the most devout. This is 6 cost, 5 strength, intrigue, and power icons, the 7 trait, no attachments except the 7, and reaction after character enters play under an opponent's control. If another character entered play under that player's control this phase, the most devout gains 1 power, limit once per phase. I mean, I don't think I'm going too far out on a limb to say this just isn't very good, right? Like my opponent has control over the effect. Yes, if that phase is marshaling, they probably want to play more than one. So then the most devout probably triggers, but at that point, he's probably 1 power per turn. I mean, maybe you get lucky against a Shadows deck, you get to trigger it again, and you get 2 power a turn. So this is like very conditional renown. Doesn't have any other abilities. You can't use any in-house reducers on it. Like, it's just not enough. It's just not enough for what it needs. This is probably going to be a D.
I think the uniqueness is what's killing it for me. If it was non-unique, I'd like it a lot more.
I mean, you can great haul it, I suppose, since it's unique. So that's
sure.
Something.
I don't like that it's unique because you don't want to run three of these, but you kind of do to get the effect. So it's like damned if you do, damned if you don't for this type of card. I mean, I agree that I think it's a D, but primarily because of it being unique.
If it was an army like you wanted it to be, Zach, it'd be an A.
Mm-hmm.
But
I agree with that 100%.
Because then you could play dual. But you can't. So this goes down quite a bit. I actually think there might be a 7 deck that does want this. I don't think this is a bad card. I do think the type of control deck that would want this probably wants dual in this environment more. It probably is running like dual and Valor D, and probably not Valorem, but it's possible, especially if it's Barrow 7, where you could Stormlands Fiefdom on the power you're getting and not care that much about the character. It's an incidental value type of addition and a big body for how many big body the 7 characters there are. That would be very good. But this is obviously ifs. So as it stands, I think it's probably a C. I think controlling the way your opponent plays is something that has to be respected. And I also think the game is moving more toward big bodies, and some houses do that better than others, right? If you're a Greyjoy, you obviously don't. There's no deck that you'd want this in because you have the best big bodies. But the houses that lack some big bodies but want to have some sort of control effect that forces your opponent to make decisions and have to play around, it's okay.
So this is probably good in Stark Faith. Stark Faith is really strong and really, really fast, and this just adds to that speed. Like, you're not always going to see Fat Cat right away. If you don't see Fat Cat right away, this is a nice, reasonable place to store a bunch of power. You run a few of them, it grabs a bunch of power, you're a happy person. I don't see any real problem with that. Once the Shadow Agenda comes out, two characters entering play in the challenge phase is going to be more likely. So now it's up to two power a turn. Excuse me. And those two power a turn are also... those two power a turn are also gaining from triggering your agenda. And so, like, it's a nice fat body for that. It's not going in Barrow Faith, which wants to run low into the ground. And I don't honestly believe any other Faith is a real deck. Although Martell Faith isn't bad. But, like, I don't really, like, it wouldn't go there either. So, I think in Stark Faith, this is solid. I don't think it's necessarily a go-to there, but it's a nice, let's say, C plus there.
Okay. What's up next?
Next would be Statue of Baylor, which would be our guest.
One second. My phone froze up. All right, Statue of Baylor. It's a two-cost neutral location, unique. King's Landing in the 7 traded. Action, kneel Statue of Baylor and discard one power from another character or location you control to stand that character or location. Yeah, this is a really, really good location. It doesn't have to target 7 characters. You get fast Eddie triggers. You get Fat Cat standing back up. You get Balon doing more on a post shenanigans. This is an amazing card. I give this an A++. It's a really, really good card.
It's an S. It makes me upset. I don't think it's good for the game. I don't think anything that this benefits. But it essentially says, with your big dudes, remove your renown, make a null challenge with the big dude, and get more renown on it to replace that other renown. That's pretty good.
I mean, as long as making the challenge with that dude has some other benefits. I mean, mainly I'm looking at intimidate, but there's a lot.
Winning the challenge?
Well, yeah.
Fast steady. Stand whenever the hell you want it. It's just real good.
Oh, Fast Eddie, yeah. And stands out to other people, which is pretty sweet.
Fast Eddie, Big Bob,
All the unopposed shenanigans from Greyjoy. Everyone loves this.
I mean, I don't love this. This makes me cry.
But yeah. I mean, Martell in general is just real sad at this, right? Like, Martell and Barry hate this card.
I think the type of Barry decks that me and you would like, Aaron, yes, but I think there is the type of, like, just abuse Big Bob, who is intimidated and renowned.
Even Barry, they want to like intimidate this. Stuff down. They don't want you to be able to stand it back up.
Oh, you mean they hate playing against it?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, sure, everyone hates playing against it, but besides Martell, I think this fits in, well, Martell and Nightwatch, I think this fits in every single deck.
Really? I'm not sure about that. Like, a lot of the Barry decks I'm playing right now, like, and I'm winning, are real, real, real slow.
Yeah, I don't think this will go in. Aaron called these group of cards, because the seven cards, me cards, because I'm playing Barra 7 almost exclusively lately, and I don't think I have any inclination to play this card.
It's just, yeah. I don't know. Like, it's close to being what I want it to be. Like, if it just said and stand another 7 character or location, it would be really cool and interesting. But as is, it's just more fodder for the game's most boring stuff. So I think it's an A, not an S, because I think it's going to prove mildly harder to slot than most people think. But I think it's still really, really good.
Yep. I mean, I don't really know how much more I have to add past what we've got. I think it seems to have a lot of potential. I mean, in the base, like the character base it can apply to, is only going to keep growing. I mean, like, the targets are everywhere. So, yeah. I think I'm willing to give it an A.
All right. Scott, face the career, Manny.
Whatever. I'll read Faith. Zero cost event, Fate's Decree, neutral, the 7 traded. Play only if you control the 7 character or location. Action. Name a non-agenda, non-plot card. Until end of phase, each opponent cannot trigger card abilities of cards with that name. This is real good. You can see the board, so it isn't that difficult to name something. This can stop those fast Eddie triggers you were talking about, but it can also stop things like Euron or Silence or any other character ability that is very relevant, but also location abilities too. So Dorne triggers, Flea Bottom, whatever you need. So it's also very flexible. The bigger inhibitor is having the 7 character location. Starry Sept is around quite a bit.
I run 3 7 characters in every deck.
You run Begging Brothers in every deck, yes, but not everyone does. But yes, I think you probably should run Begging Brothers. They are quite good. But I don't think you run this card if you only have 3 7 cards in your deck. I think I'd have to do the math in it, but I think you want quite a bit more than that. If you have the 7 cards, this isn't a minus quality card, I'd say. But you have to have the 7 cards. Otherwise, don't play this because you won't be able to play it.
Although, didn't we just say everyone is going to be running Statue of Valor?
I don't know about everyone. I don't think Martell's running it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what
it also does have the location.
Yeah.
That's really easy to miss.
Yeah, no, I knew Statue of Baelor counted, but again, even if you ran 3 Statue of Baelor and 3 Begging, so that's 6 cards in your deck.
Can you interest Statue of Baelor?
Yes, you can. It's unique.
Yeah, you should be able to.
Yeah, you can.
I mean, and Starry Sept, speaking of HRDs, Starry Sept's also the 7.
Yeah, you can Starry Sept HRD. Then you can obviously run this. I don't think Statue of Baelor is... I could be wrong. Maybe it's a good HRD location, but I don't know if it's that quality. We haven't seen HRD Plasma, and this would be in that type of area, right?
Klaus is also just so good on setup that it hurts to take out of that role. But yeah, like, we haven't seen HRD flee bottom either, right? I don't know. I don't think Face Decree is in every deck. I think Face Decree is in an awful lot of Snark decks, and then any Faith deck you run. But it's an S in those decks. I think it's one of the better cards that's been... Well, we've gotten a lot of really strong cards, but I think it's one of the better cards in the game, joining the long list of other really, really strong cards. I also think it is, unless I'm missing something in my head as I'm looking through, likely the best card in the pack.
That's
I think it's the best card. I mean, like, whether it shapes the meta or not just depends on if people play 7 or not. Like, 7 is good enough to be played. I just think this card in particular is completely, like, insane in 7 decks.
I mean, it's like a pseudo-treachery. There's some different pluses and minuses to this particular variation on that, but we all know treachery.
I think it's actually better than treachery.
In some ways, yes. In some ways, no. Treachery is easier to trigger.
Yeah. Easier trigger, and if the ability has a Neil involved in it, treachery means they can't just attempt it the next phase or something, depending on what the ability is. So, I mean, there's some trade-offs. I suppose what treachery also stops attachment abilities, right?
Well, this does as well.
Yeah.
I guess. Yeah, that's fair. It's interesting they changed that wording from listing the card types to that it does affect to listing the card types it does not affect. Mm. You heard it here first, folks. We're going to get a new card type introduced next cycle.
Or just FFG is inconsistent.
No.
That would make sense. I do think it's a really, really strong card, and is probably one of the bigger pushes at the moment to actually play 7 stuff above and beyond, you know, the generic good like Begging Brother. So yeah, I think it's going to be a good tool to have available in the card. I think this is very nice to have as a neutral, despite the fact that I'm probably going to be super frustrated when it gets played against me at key moments. So yeah.
I agree with all of you. It's an amazing card. Just pointly in your Bear of Faith deck, Scott, this, I mean, slot right in. Just you run, you know, look, hand destruction with the red priest and the event. You look at their hand and then say they can't ambush or play whatever events they want to play, or you just point and click and say Drogon can't play this game. Or it's an amazing card. Super flexible, really easy to trigger, especially in 7 decks.
Definitely better than Privileged Position for the deck, for sure. I'm not sure where I can go.
Last one.
Great. Manning? Manning the City Walls? 4116 plot, City and War. When revealed, put a non-unique character from the cost 3 or lower into play from your hand. From the cost 6 or lower, instead, if there is at least if there is a city plot in your use. It's awesome, like, really, really great for Martell and probably Dothraki and that Josh Chambers Tyrell deck that loves all its little knights and probably some other stuff I'm not thinking of, I guess. And it's pointedly not good for Greyjoy and Stark, so that's awesome. Because they don't want anything from this, right? Like, overall.
I mean if Fat Cat likes the River Run Minerals. I mean,
like, at that point, you're probably not running this just for that, though, right?
I don't. Exactly. Yeah. They're not going to run it, but I mean, they're small targets they could, but overall they're not running.
Bartel now looks to find space for the
there you go. Man, that's nearly the first Ed Manning.
It's Manning, right, especially there. In Forest X.
I mean, nearly.
Well, except that was turn one, yeah. Right? And this is
and that one had two claim, right?
Turn three or later, and the body is way the F worse. Missing still
fantastic. I mean, cheating in draw. Yeah. Cheating so in draw army. That's that part.
You're wrong, Aaron.
Yeah.
Stark puppies.
I wish this had.
That's okay. That's the only Stark deck I don't hate. Trait.
Just really wish this was a scheme.
Host of the Bone Way is really amazing with this. The Dothraki, whatever, the six strength, the six cost one. That raises claim. This is going to be really, really, really good. And I'm really looking forward to this because this is actually, like, I think the only card in the pack that promotes different deck builds than just stuff we already have. So I'm giving it an A, and I love it. It's my favorite design space in this entire pack.
This plot is going to make me run double barring the gates in almost all of my decks.
If Flea Bottom didn't. If Flea Bottom.
Heir to the Iron Throne. Flea Bottom didn't do that.
Nothing is. Flea Bottom just ran the game for like 2 years.
Well, I mean, this in conjunction with the other Jumpers stuff. I mean, like with Flea Bottom, with the other Martell shenanigans. Like, this is.
In a meta where you're going to see the kingdom.
I mean, go for it. The Shadows. Seems like a mistake. I think Martell is the worst faction right now. It's Martell or Lannister, but I think they're significantly behind all the others.
As far as having a tier 1 deck list, it's probably Lanny. Actually, no, Lanny Crossing is still good.
Crossing is still good. Lanny Shadows is still really good. Lanny's good decks have the exact same problems as Martell's good decks. Stark. But Lanny has a Sea of Blood build, and Martell's Sea of Blood is kind of trash. Also, Lanny's weakness has been draw, and like no one's built Lanny with Siege Prep yet. So I'm not sure Lanny has a weakness anymore.
Might be okay.
Just because no one's built that deck doesn't mean it's not there.
Would you play 2x Siege Prep?
I think one's probably enough, but I have to test it. It's just, it's not a deck I'm particularly interested in. I threw one together. Since I'm not particularly interested in it, I didn't actually bother to test it.
It's not Clansman, you mean?
Well, Jesse will, because he loves
not,
Lanny.
It's not his kind of Lanny.
His is Clansman. Yeah.
It's Lanny Wolf. I basically took Joe Mirando's deck, added a couple of the new cards, and then threw in Siege Prep and figured that probably makes it good. It's probably good.
We need to build a Stark puppets now.
You do that. I am not. I am.
I mean,
you could also
really
just
interested.
Say, "Hey, Jesse, get us Sam Bratz's list," and then we can not have to build one.
That's true. Yeah. I'm sure it'll be better than ours too.
There's certain things I want to build. Like people are like, "I need a cohort build." I'm like, "I am not the guy. I need puppies." Okay, go find someone who makes that. Rate this card.
This card. Rate this card.
B plus.
Give it. I'd say B plus as well.
I mean, I'll jump on that particular bus. It seems pretty reasonable. And with the popularity of At the Gates, you're always have that city plot from turn one. So. The city plots this time around, I think, are going to become nearly as popular as the first Shed ones. Just kind of wish the effects were a little more. I don't know. You know, maybe kinda. Pushed. Except that, like, the ones that are pushed, at least at the gates, is obviously super pushed. But I guess they're just like very constructive push. So
I think the two climb one's real good too.
Oh, the City Besieged.
You don't think the two climb one is good?
I do think it's good, but I think it's a little harder to take advantage of as widely as say at the gates. And I think manning the city walls is about to be. That two gold is a little bit of a ding. I mean, yes, you probably have plus two from maybe plus three from your Gates of the Moon and your opponent's Gates of the Moon from turn one. But you know, you're still starting with a lower base than some other stuff. So I don't know. It's one I consider, but I think it's for certain decks, not as wide. Okay. Is that the pack? I guess that's the pack.
Props.
As Scott started to say, let's do props and slops.
Slops 2 D&D. Apparently, Miguel Sapochnik wanted the Law Knight to have 50 direwolves against the undead dragon, brand warden to animals, and the Night King battle scenes, but was rejected by D&D. As usual, they ruined everything.
I have not heard that before. This is...
It's from the
it's terrifying.
Reddit.
No, I shouldn't be.
Are you surprised?
But hey, you know, at least they submitted for Best Writing Emmy. So that's something. Yeah.
Definitely. No, it's not.
What else? You know, I'm gonna prop Captain Mark now that it's out on DVD and other home video formats. Rewatched it. I think I actually enjoyed it a lot more this time around than the first time. Not as interested in logic nitpicking this time. Just kind of tried to enjoy it for what it was, and that worked. So there we go.
I want a prop. Oh, go for it. No, go for it. Mine's totally off topic.
I'll follow that line of thinking. Go ahead, Aaron. Okay. Mine was going to be also TV.
I did watch the first episode
on the DC Universe. It's pretty great. It's one of the few shining stars of the DC Universe.
It had already been canceled. Like the same day I watched episode one. And I thought, well, this is... a sign of the DC streaming service to come. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, they've been acting weird with the show. So I always assumed Swamp Thing was going to be one season by itself. And then the Titans show, they like cut it two episodes. And then like the last episode, they chopped it into two episodes, which is really, really weird. But in saying that, Doom Patrol is amazing. So, I mean, it's getting there. It's not there yet. I'm still paying for it because I'm a huge DC fangirl, and I just want to like,
have
everything
that's
DC.
The world needs more DC fangirl.
I want to prop the Switch, which is... super duper fun. My wife got it for me for Father's Day. which I greatly appreciate. And in particular, and I'm going to butcher this because I've been reading the name for literally 20 years and never had to say it out loud, Seiken Densetsu 3, or Trials of Mana, is finally in English.
I did not realize it was.
Oh, yeah.
Super hype playing it.
That was the old SNES game, right? With the branching path and all the different heroes. Oh, I made it like halfway through a ROM translation of that back when I was in college, and it was so good.
Me too. I don't remember why I didn't finish it, but I know I didn't. And the second I saw that come out, like a tear came to my eye. I was like, "Oh, this is perfect."
Oh, that's fantastic. I didn't even realize that.
And it comes in a Mana collection with Final Fantasy Adventure and Legend of Mana.
Okay.
So it's like $40, but like I would have paid $60 for that one game alone.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. It's worth it just for that. You might as well just toss FFA in the trash after you open the package, but otherwise, that's worth it.
It's not out on actual, whatever cartridge for like until sometime in July. Okay. So I just bought it digitally because waiting was not a thing I was supposed to do. Like the second I saw it, like I was looking through, I was like, what old games do they have? Because I'd much rather relive nostalgia than play anything new because I'm an old man. So like, I'm like, oh, Final Fantasy IX, that's great. Final Fantasy VII, oh, that's trash. And like, I'm like, wait a second.
Wait a second.
Yeah, 7 doesn't have a plot that bothers me.
Now I just need to get my FF6 remake. Then I'll be happy.
I don't even need a remake. I've played that original that like 12 times to every character in the game, 99 with every skill. Like, I don't. Like, the two games I've played most, and this does not speak well of me, are that and Tactics, which I've done the same thing in like 4 or 5 times. And not even my two favorite games. They were just the ones I had when I was younger and didn't have options. So I was just like, sure, I'll just play that again. But like, I never need to play those again because I know I will immediately try and max everything again.
All right.
That was me with Chrono Cross. Yes. I think I've unlocked every single character four times.
I always hype that game and everyone else is like, no.
I had fun with it, but it's another game where the plot made zero sense. Which is
it was time travel.
That's a step up from Final Fantasy VII, which had trash gameplay and made no sense. At least Chrono Cross was fun and made no sense.
There are going to be some listeners real hot about Aaron's hot
episode.
Because they can read about it online and then it makes sense. But no one who plays that game the first time has any idea what the hell is happening.
Well,
but like, yeah, it's really cool, though.
I got it when I was like 15 or something for Christmas, and it was like the most excited I ever was for a present. And I played through it, loving it, and then I beat it after like a Christmas break of not leaving the house. And I was like, what the fuck was that? Like, I don't know anything that happened. Who was the main character? What was Sephiroth? I was so confused. Like, a 6 was amazing. Everything made sense. And, like, I had already played 6 12 times. So I was just so confused. Ugh. Never mind. Continue.
I mean, I think I'm probably tapped out for props and Scott has probably muted us so he didn't have to listen to our JRPG.
I'm drafting on MGG Arena. Kind of listening to you.
Ew. Props to MTG Arena, but slops MGG Arena because my friends keep trying to make me play it.
Oof. That's rough.
It's okay. They haven't succeeded yet.
Stay strong, Aaron. Stay strong. Because you know what happens if you start playing, right?
I go to the danger zone?
Oh. Knocked it out of the park.
Danger zone.
That closes this chapter of the white book. Knocked it out of the park.
Danger Zone.
Kenny Loggins. I loved Kenny Loggins, but that's a whole different direction. Did he die? I know of.
Why did you say I love Kenny Loggins? I thought he was dead.
I don't know. It was a slip of the tongue.
I'm Googling him. You know,
it's like Schrodinger Kenny Loggins.
We will never know where he died if you look it up. Don't look.
He's still alive. Don't do that. I looked already. He was typing before I spoke. I was like, oh, shit. All right. All right, listeners, Kenny Loggins is alive. And so is Eddard Starr.